So we have this evening small program to honor the special occasion of Shivaratri. Lord Shiva, of course, is a very famous personality, and rightly so. He's a very great personality. According to the Vedic literatures, he is a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sri Giri Govardhan Ki. According to the Vedic literatures, he is a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Unlike what generally so many people think he is, they often see him, or generally see him, as an independent controller, an independent god, so to speak, in and of his own right. But according to the Vedic literatures, it is not exactly like that. Not to minimize him in the slightest, but it is nice to understand what is the truth in relation to everything, actually. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Amongst the general scriptures which
popular in this day and age. So the Vedic literatures, they're like royalty amongst scriptures. But amongst the Vedic literatures, Srimad Bhagavatam is described by Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, the greatest of our Vaishnava Acharyas. Srimad Bhagavatam is described as the emperor, the king of kings, of scriptures. Yes, so in Srimad Bhagavatam there are a number of incidents in which Lord Shiva features prominently. For example, in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a chapter called Singing the Song Sung by Lord Shiva. So, there, in that particular chapter, the Prachetas, they're a group of devotees. The Prachetas, they meet Lord Shiva. And they inquire from Lord Shiva about different things. And Lord Shiva, very quickly and in a very focused way, he brings their attention to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And then he recites his own special prayers to Lord Krishna. We won't go through those here, but there's perhaps 30 or so verses, these prayers by Lord Shiva, glorifying Lord Krishna very beautifully in an extremely devotional mood. So that is there in the fourth canto. However, I thought we could just describe something which happens, which is described in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is quite a lengthy description, and it is quite a dramatic description about how Lord Shiva saved the universe, basically, by drinking an ocean of poison. It's a very wonderful description, very wonderful story. It appears in the context of a greater story or bigger story. There's one particular chapter, one particular event in a whole sequence of events which are described through quite a number of chapters in the eighth canto. Without going into all the details, but basically there was a great contest, great conflict between the demigods and the demons. In this context, when we say the demons, we mean the celestial demons. They, not just the little demons who we have here on this planet, certain political figures, maybe Mr. Gaddafi is currently very much in the limelight. But he's not a demon like that. His qualification as a demon is really lacking compared to these demons. They're celestial demons. And actually, their business, other than trying to enjoy material existence to the utmost, their business is somehow or other to try to take over the whole universe from the control of the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and Lord Indra, and the other managerial demigods who are controlling the functions of this universe. So as we said, that description, it covers quite a bit of the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Shiva. And there are all sorts of different things that happen, and someone is winning, but then someone else is winning, and then they're defeated, and it's back and forth, a lot of excitement and action. But those demons, they were very determined that we have an opportunity here. We could take over the universe and kick out the demigods. So, as we said, it really is a long story. A very amazing story. It would make quite an amazing movie of some sort if anyone would be able to get it together to do such a movie. But at one point, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ajita, a particular form of Lord Vishnu, he is known as Ajita, the unconquerable one. So Lord Ajita informed both the demigods and the demons that it is possible we can make an arrangement to extract immortal nectar from the ocean of milk. In this universe, there are different oceans. Here, of course, in Durban, we have the ocean of salt water. But there is an ocean of liquor. Yes, you may all turn off your cell phones. There's an ocean of liquor. There's an ocean of honey. And there's an ocean of milk. There's an ocean of milk. Did you ever stop to think why there's so many big lakes, huge lakes? They're all fresh water, but the seas are salt water. Anyway, we will not go into that discussion, but the thing is, there are different types of oceans, and there is a milk ocean. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead told the demigods and the demons that we can churn the ocean of milk and from it extract nectar of immortality. We can do that. And whoever drinks that will be immortal. And whoever doesn't drink it will be mortal. And so therefore, of course, those who are mortal, they'll be able to take over the whole universe and defeat the mortal ones. So everyone was very enthusiastic. Yes, let's churn this ocean of milk. So they did that. They used the celestial serpent, Vasuki, as a churning rope. They used Mandara Mountain as a churning rod. The Supreme Lord incarnated as Kurama, the tortoise form of the Lord, for them to rest Mandara Mountain on, otherwise it would sink into the milk ocean. And then they turned Vasuki, the serpent, around the mountain, and then back and forth they were churning. So they churned and churned. Eventually, nectar came out. Later. Actually, many things came out. But the first thing that came out was a deadly, deadly poison. So extremely deadly that if allowed to just move around freely, it could have contaminated the whole universe. So the demigods and the demons, they were wondering what to do. We have to do something to save the universe here. We need someone to deal with this poison. But who is powerful enough to do that? And the conclusion was, Lord Shiva is powerful enough. Now you might wonder, and indeed the question is raised in the commentaries on the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that, okay, Lord Shiva, he was able to drink that ocean of poison, and in that way it was eliminated and it was no longer a danger to the universe. Alright, but why did they not say Krishna or Vishnu or this particular form of the Lord who was there? Ajita, he is Lord Vishnu and he is unconquerable. Why not him? So the Acharyas, the great commentators, they point out that yes, of course, Ajita, he could have consumed that ocean of poison and many oceans of poison if he had decided he wanted to do that. But in this particular situation, he wanted to see his devotee, Lord Shiva, become prominent and be glorified for this, what was really a great act of mercy and kindness, even at great risk to himself, for the benefit of the universe and all living entities in the universe. He was willing to take this risk to help them. So the Lord wanted to see that his devotee, Lord Shiva, was glorified like that. So they called on Lord Shiva, offered prayers to him, appreciating his potency, and then appealed to him, please, drink this ocean of poison. You can do it. Who else can do it? None of us can do it, but you can do it. Please do it. And your reputation will be so well known for being a merciful person. So Lord Shiva went and he did that. There is a painting in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. Those of you who have sense at home, you can see it. Lord Shiva is kneeling down right on the side, on the shore of that milk ocean. And you can see this dark poison. It was called Halahala. Terrible, terrible poison. Huge, huge quantities of it. It's floating, this dark substance floating on top of the ocean of milk. So Lord Shiva knelt down there on the shore and cupped his hands and took all that poison. He drank it and drank it and drank it. However, being concerned that this poison is exceptionally powerful and in such a huge quantity, he felt, let me not drink it like completely into my stomach. I will drink it and hold it in my throat. So he did that. Somehow he kept that huge amount of poison in his throat. And it was so powerful, it turned his throat blue. This is why, of course, you see all sorts of different pictures of Lord Shiva. But in some pictures you see Lord Shiva, he has a blue throat. That is from that poison. And as a result, he is called Nilakanta. Just as Krishna has many names, Lord Shiva also has a number of names in terms of his different qualities and different activities. So one of those names is Nilakanta. In order to save the universe, he swallowed that ocean of poison and held it in his throat, and somehow or other it got dissipated and was finished. And later that nectar came out, and the demigods and the demons, oh, they all wanted to get it, but that is another story. Yeah, that's a different leela. So there is a verse, it's a very famous verse actually, from Srimad Bhagavatam, describing Lord Shiva from this particular pastime and the discussion in the Bhagavatam about this pastime. There's a very nice verse glorifying Lord Shiva, but in a broader sense it's also glorifying any great devotees who make some special endeavor without being concerned for their own well-being, for the benefit of the living entities in general. Unfortunately, I don't have the Sanskrit here, but the translation is, it is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. So when Lord Shiva did that, everyone was so happy. As Lord Shiva was drinking that poison, there's so much, and he has his hands cupped like this, little drops were sometimes splashing out. Not much, but a few little drops here and there. And the Bhagavatam, at the end of that particular description, the Bhagavatam says, scorpions, cobras, poisonous drugs, and other animals whose bites are poisonous took the opportunity to drink whatever little poison had fallen and scattered from Lord Shiva's hands while he was drinking. So, of course, there's certainly poisonous creatures, snakes, scorpions, and so on and so forth. And this particular incident happened long, long, long time ago. So, just a few drops of that poison was consumed by these creatures, snakes, scorpions, poisonous plants, things like this. And just that small amount, those few small drops, they still, to this day, thousands and thousands and thousands of years later, they're still so poisonous, they're still being carried to this day. And if one gets bitten by some, like a cobra, some really dangerous snake, one will certainly be killed. So this is just a tiny bit from a few small drops. So just imagine what it was like. What did Lord Shiva swallow? It was really something fantastic, completely fantastic, and actually sufficient to destroy the whole population of the universe. So he took that risk for the benefit of the people in general as a service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Lord Shiva. There's a very interesting discussion in Padma Purana between Radha and Krishna. Radharani is raising some doubts about Lord Shiva, because as we know, Lord Shiva, he wears on his body the ashes of cremated bodies. He associates sometimes with ghosts. He spends time around the crematoriums, places like that. And yes, he spends time, a lot of time, with ghosts, hobgoblins, ticaloshes, and other dangerous, lower, subtle entities. So Radharani was raising some doubts to Lord Krishna that you say, and so many people say, that this Lord Shiva is a great devotee and a great personality, but look at him. Look at him. Sometimes he smokes ganja. That's against the four regulative principles. Not allowed to do that. So how can he be a great devotee and a great personality and see who he hangs out with? Yeah, it's just, you know, it's not good. It's not good. And Lord Krishna said, my dear Srimati Radharani, I think you don't understand, really, the position of Lord Shiva, who he is, what he is. Why does he associate with the ghosts and hobgoblins and ticaloshes? He's preaching to the ticaloshes. They can also become devotees. So, Krishna said, why is he doing that? It is because he's so merciful. He is so merciful. He wants to give a chance to even the lowest, the worst, the most fallen. So he associates with them, but he doesn't accept their association. Means they don't influence him. He influences them. He preaches to them. And when he's with them, sometimes he chants the holy names and they hear. And in this way, their dormant Krishna consciousness, very dormant, it becomes aroused. And some of them actually become devotees. This is why he does it. It's not that he likes their association. It's not that he is that sort of person at all. And Radharani said, well, all right then. But, why does he smoke ganja? Why does he do that? That is terrible. That's a very degraded activity. It's just sense gratification. And just low-class sense gratification at that. If he's such a great devotee and such a great person, why does he smoke ganja? Lord Krishna said, you don't understand. He only smokes ganja when he is with them, those
and others, Pishachas, Kacharis, Jeshtas. These are different types of witches. Watch out. I'll tell you some Krishna conscious ghost stories. So he only smokes that when he's with them, just so they'll become attracted to him. And they'll think, oh, look at him. He's good. He's one of us. So they'll accept him. Otherwise, if he refused, they think, oh, who is he? What sort of person is he? He's not really one of us. And then Krishna said, don't think that he is affected by that ganja. Don't think he's affected. Krishna reminded Srimati Radharani of the story we mentioned at first. Krishna said, you remember, at the beginning of the creation, he drank an ocean of poison, and he was not affected. Just his throat went a little blue. So a little bit of ganja, it's toxic. This is why it's called an intoxicant. Because it is toxic, it's a poison. Like alcoholic drinks and all these cigarettes and all these things. They're intoxicants. Why? Because they're toxic. They're poisonous. So that ganja, it's toxic. But compared to that ocean of poison, it's almost nothing. And he drank the whole ocean of poison. He was totally unaffected. So it's not a question of sense gratification or getting some effect out of it at all. It's just part of his preaching strategy. And Radharani said, well, all right then. And she said, but look, why? Why is it that he hangs around the crematoriums, and when some of the bodies are burnt, he collects the ashes and rubs them all over his body? Why is that? Devotees don't do things like that. Now, we may take the ashes of a devotee or someone and put them in the Ganges and do some ceremony, but we don't rub them over our bodies. Lord Shiva said, those ashes are from the cremated body of Sati. Sati is Parvati in her previous lifetime. She was the daughter of Daksha. That's described in the fourth canto of the Bhagavata. It's another long story. We won't get into the details. But she married Lord Shiva. But then she was insulted by her father Daksha. She committed suicide. Self-immolation. She generated fire from within her own body. And just her whole body got burnt to pieces. So Krishna told Srimati Radharani, those ashes are from the cremated body of Sati, his wife, who was such a great devotee and so extremely dear to him. Out of affection for her and out of respect for her Krishna consciousness, he's put her ashes over his body. And sometimes if some other great devotee is cremated, he takes those ashes also and puts those ashes on. And Radharani said, oh, I see. All right. of scarlets. Why not just a nice garland like this one? Why a garland of scarlets? And Krishna said, you don't understand, Radharani, you don't understand. This garland, that garland of scarlets, they're the skulls of great devotees. Out of respect for them, he's keeping them. Just like in Vrindavan, there is one temple. It is called the Gadadha Dant Samadhi. There is one tooth of Gadadha from the Panchatattva. So Krishna said like that. And at the bottom of the garland, like here you see there's the bottom little bit. The skull right at the bottom, that's Sati's skull. So out of respect for the great devotees, he's wearing these skulls. And Radharani said, oh, all right, I see. Then she said, but wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why does he keep that cobra, that snake, around his neck? That's terrible. That's terrible. It's a dangerous creature. You shouldn't do that. Devotees don't like snakes. They like cows and peacocks. Why some deadly creature? Krishna said, my dear Srimati Radharani, you don't understand. That snake, it looks just like some cobra, some snake. That snake is a Nantashesh, a form of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So, this is wonderful. This is actually completely auspicious. And Srimati Radharani said, alright. Well, let me think about it. Then she said, I know. Why does he have three eyes? Three eyes. Looks so strange and weird. Three eyes. Why does he have three eyes? And Krishna said, you don't understand. Let me explain. Krishna told Srimati Radharani, one time Lord Shiva performed austerities for 60,000 years just to see me. So I appeared in front of him. When I appeared in front of him, he collapsed in ecstasy. And then he got up, he was just looking at me and drinking my form through his eyes. And suddenly he manifested a third eye. And he said, I can't see you sufficiently with just two eyes. And Krishna said, it is not just a matter of three eyes. Sometimes when he sees me, he manifests five heads and 10 eyes because he wants to see me so much. And Srimati Radharani said, oh, I see. Well, why does he eat datura? It's poison. It's horrible stuff. Why does he eat that? Krishna said, Radharani, you don't understand. He wants the best for me. Just the best for me. So whatever he gets which is nice, he offers it to me. And for himself, he just takes whatever rubbish is there. Nothing. He just doesn't care what he has. But he wants the best for me. So Radharani came to that point where she had run out of doubts. But she was still, she just couldn't accept completely. So she sat there thinking. I said, I know, wait, 1 minute. Now this is a very serious point. Why is it that Lord Shiva is Ashutosh? He's very easily satisfied by materialistic worshippers who want some money or good health or some material things. If he was really a devotee, he wouldn't give them those things. Why does he give material things to people so easily? They practically do nothing. And he gives them whatever they want. What do you got to say? And Krishna said, my dear Shrimati Radharani, you don't understand. It is a fact. He is Ashutosh. And you see him on Kailash, and we see pictures of him. He is sitting under a banyan tree. And he's just got some cloth or skin around his waist. And he's sitting there with his Rudraksha mala. And what is he doing? He's chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he's so absorbed, he has his eyes closed, he is just immersed in the holy names, relishing so much nectar. And suddenly, some auntie from Chatsworth comes, knocking on his door. Well, he doesn't have a door, but anyway, comes and says, give me a house and a car and a colour TV, please. And a lifetime subscription to Bollywood movies, and you win every day. Please, Lord Shiva. And so, Lord Shiva, there he is, absorbed in his meditation. It is just so ecstatic. And then along comes this person who wants some ordinary, stupid material things. And so Lord Shiva, Krishna told Srimati Radharani, he knows that as my servant in the position of a demigod, he knows it is his duty to fulfill people's desires. He knows that. So therefore people come to him, he fulfills their desires. But the thing is, he is so much into his chanting that when they disturb him and they come and ask, give me this, give me that, and then he's forced out of his meditation, he just says, yeah, what do you want here? Just take it and go. And just get out of here now. So he can get back to his chanting. He just wants to get back to his chanting. And Krishna said, you know, you can see he is not interested in those things. He is not interested in having a new BMW. He's not interested. He just uses Nandi, the bull. He's not interested in nice clothes. He just has one simple cloth or some animal skin even sometimes. And And he's not interested in a nice, comfortable house or a palace and furniture, and he's just sitting under the tree. So you can see, it's not that he thinks these are nice things, and that he thinks he's doing the people a favor and helping them in their lives. He has no choice because he's my servant as a demigod. But he's not into it. He'd rather just chant and chant. So when Lord Krishna said that, then Srimati Radharani was forced to agree, okay, that's true. I've seen that. He just lives with nothing. And he's just chanting and chanting all day. That's what his heart is into. So this way at Padma Purana, Lord Krishna convinced Srimati Radharani about the exalted position of Lord Shiva. Not that Srimati Radharani needs to be convinced, but this is just their pastime for our education. So Lord Shiva, who is Lord Shiva then? Who is he really? This is described, it's described in Brahma Samhita. There's also description in the Bhagavatam, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Rupa Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha and Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. They refer to Vayu Purana. One section of Vayu Purana. Vayu Purana is still existing, but not the whole thing. Parts of it are missing. They refer to one part of Vayu Purana which is now missing, which talks about Lord Shiva. And there, Vayu Purana, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they quote Vayu Purana as saying that the original form of Lord Shiva is an expansion of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. And his name is Sadashiva. Sadashiva basically means the eternal Shiva. So he's the original form of Lord Shiva. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the chapter, The Glories of Advaita Acharya, who is also a form of Lord Shiva, Srila Prabhupada, the purport there, makes the point that Sadashiva is a form of Vishnu, like a Leela form of Vishnu, and he has his own Vaikuntha planet. So he's a form of Narayan. That at least that particular form of Shiva is a form of the Supreme Lord, Narayan. Then, if we look, see there are a number of forms of Lord Shiva on different levels. That is the highest form. Next form is the form described in Brahma Samhita, in verses 8, 9, like that. I have verse 8 here. Let me just read a sentence or two. Let's see. So, Lord Brahma says, the divine plenary portion of Krishna, he's referring to Mahavishnu. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. At creation, there appears a divine halo of nature its own subjective portion. This halo is divine Shambhu. Shambhu means Shiva. This halo is the divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. What is that supreme eternal effulgence? That is the Brahmajyoti. Now, Jiva Goswami has written a commentary on Brahma Samhita. We have the translation and commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, but Jiva Goswami has also presented a commentary on Brahma Samhita. So in his commentary on that verse, he expands on this particular point, clarifies the particular point that we've just read about. Here someone may object. Is it said somewhere that there is a cause of Shiva and Durga? The answer is that as the universal form is manifested from Lord Vishnu, so also is Shiva and Durga manifested from Lord Vishnu. This is confirmed in this verse by the word Tal Lingam. It's a Sanskrit word which appears in the verse. In the Vishnu Purana it is said, the potency of the material world is manifested from a part of a part of a million millionth part of Lord Vishnu. If you think that's small enough, that's talking about someone who's very great by our standards. So, Jiva Goswami continues, thus, a small part of Lord Vishnu's spiritual effulgence means the Brahmajyoti is the effulgence of the Supreme Lord. Thus, a small part of Lord Vishnu's spiritual effulgence is manifested as the linga described here. That linga is Shambhu. A specific manifestation of that is called Shambhu. So when Mahavishnu and his consort Rama Devi, not Rama but Rama Devi, as Lakshmi is to Narayan, Sita is to Ram, Radha is to Krishna, Rama is to Mahavishnu. So, Mahavishnu and Rama Devi, they are the lords of the material creation. And Mahavishnu feels, let us again begin the material creation. Let us start the next cycle. So what he does, he glances over the inert material nature. That inert material nature, pradhan, is a perverted form of Rama Devi, his consort, is the original form of Durga, the pradhan. So his glance, that dim halo, which is like a reflection of the actual effulgence of Lord Vishnu, the Brahmajyoti, his glance, which is that halo, then impregnates all the living entities into the material nature, extracting them from the body of Mahavishnu, impregnating them into the womb of Durga, the womb of the material nature, Durga in her original form. So that is the next form of Lord Shiva. And that glance thus enters the material nature and stays with the material nature. This is something like, you could say, the universal level, Lord Shiva, and the universal level, Durga. They're there playing their roles in supervising the entire material creation, not just one universe or another. Then those two, the original Shiva and the original Durga, expand into each universe and become the popular demigods. Shiva, as described in the Bhagavatam, normally manifests from the forehead of Lord Brahma and is known as the son of Brahma, usually. So yes, the popular demigods who are worshipped generally in the Hindu tradition, they are these, like, what would you say, third, at least Shiva is third level form, and Durga also, the popular demigod, third level form of the original Sarashiva and his consort. I hope that's not too complex, but anyway, that is. And because it's also described in Brahma Smita, because Lord Shiva, through the glance, contacts Durga, the material nature, and stays with her. Even though he's so great, ultimately he's a type of form, pastime form of Narayana. Even though he's so great, but when he accepts the association of Durga, the material energy, he becomes subtly affected. Therefore, Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma, says, Lord Shiva is like, Lord Vishnu is like milk, Lord Shiva is like yogurt. What is yogurt? It's milk. It's not some other thing. But it is milk which has had contact with a souring agent, and therefore it's become permanently transformed. You can change milk into yogurt. You can't change yogurt back into milk. So Lord Shiva, at least within this material world, and particularly as the popular demigod, he's in this permanently, subtly transformed condition. And therefore, you get some pastimes. Sometimes he makes some mistakes, like with Vrikasura, he made a mistake. And so like this. And even sometimes, when circumstances are such, are in a certain way, in one universe, then sometimes a jiva soul, means an ordinary living entity like us, is allowed to take the position of Lord Shiva. So Jiva Goswami discusses this at some length in Krishna Sandarbha, that there are two types of Shivas within the universes, as the popular demigod in charge of ignorance and in charge of certain things within a particular universe. Sometimes a jiva soul is allowed to take the position of Lord Shiva. So, allow me, do you have a few minutes? Seeing we've gone so far, Allow me to close by telling you one other story about Lord Shiva. This is about Lord Shiva in Vrindavan. Lord Shiva, he's very great. And when Lord Krishna comes to the universe, when Lord Krishna came 5,000 years ago, then Lord Shiva also would come from time to time and participate in different pastimes. He was very aware that Krishna was present, and he was very keen to be involved. And Lord Shiva, as you probably know, he's famous as Nataraj, as a great dancer. So Lord Krishna was having his pastimes in Vrindavan. First of all, the childhood pastimes, like early childhood, then getting a little older, and then the later Vrindavan pastimes when Krishna's like a youth. And that means particularly the rasa dance. So these amazing dances were taking place every night. Incredible rasa dances. And Lord Shiva was watching from somewhere above. And he's a great dancer. He loves dancing. So he felt, I want to take part too. I really want to participate. So what he did, he came down and approached Purnamasi. She is Yogamaya, the presiding deity, controlling the manager of the Vrindavan Leelas. So Lord Shiva approached Purnamasi and said, you know, can I take part in the rasa dance? And Purnamasi said, well, look, Krishna is the only male in the rasa dance, so I don't think it's possible. You can watch, maybe. Lord Shiva said, no, please, you've got to help me. So Purnamasi took Lord Shiva to Mansarova. It's one holy court in Vrindavan Dham. And she dipped him in Mansarova. He came out in a gopi form. In that form, Lord Shiva, as a female, as a gopi, Lord Shiva is known as Gopeshwar. So now, in his or her female form, Gopeshwar Shiva went flying back. I'm going to take part in the rasa dance. This is wonderful. And he arrived there. And the gopis took one look at him, or her rather, and said, wow, who are you? Who are you? Because Gopeshwar Shiva, Lord Shiva is big. He's big and he's powerfully built. Gopeshwar, the female form of Shiva, is big and powerfully built. Not your ordinary young gopi. But, you know, anyway, big and powerful woman, young woman. And the gopis looked at her and said, who are you? Where did you come from? And so then they confronted Gopeshwar Shiva and said, what's your name? Purnamasi had neglected to give Gopeshwar a name, like a gopi name, a girl's name. So Shiva could not say anything. He couldn't say he was Lord Shiva, that was for sure. So he said, name. You mean name? You mean what people call me? Is that what you mean? The gopi said, yes, that's what we mean. And Gopeshwar Shiva said, name. Okay, right. It's on the tip of my tongue. You know, I just can't remember my name. And the gopi said, oh, okay, fine. Can't remember your name, right. Well, look, in that case, What are your parents' names? You must know them. And Govishwa, again, caught unawares. Parents? What do you mean, parents? You mean like mother and father? Is that what you mean? And the goat said, yes, that's right. What are your parents' names? And Govishwa said, right, okay. You know, I'm having a bad day. Their name, you know, right? You know what their names are. He said, you know, I forgot my parents' names. I'm so sorry. And the gopi said, oh, fine, you forgot your parents' name. And your name. Oh, okay, that sounds nice. And they said, well, look, in that case, that's all right. We don't mind. Just tell us, what's the name of your village? Where do you live? And Shiva, Gopishwar said, village? You mean place? You mean living? Where I live? House? You mean like that? And the Gopi said, yes, that's right. That's what we mean. And Shiva said, well, look, it's, you know that village? It's just over the top there in Unit 5, you know, just around the corner and just down the road. You know that village, don't you? And the gopi said, oh, okay, you forgot the name of that also. That's great. And then the gopi said, look, what are all those ashes doing on your body? They look like the ashes of cremated bodies. What sort of person are you? And what's that snake doing around your neck? And Lord Shiva, ashes are cosmetic. Snake, he's a pet, he's harmless, he's tame. And what about those scorpions on your body? Oh, they're also pets. And then they saw the Ganges coming out of his head, a fountain. And the gopi said, wow, your head is leaking. What's that water doing coming out of your head? And Shiva said, oh, that, well, it's to keep me cool in the summer. And the gopi said, oh, look, it's too much. It's just too much. You're just too weird. You're bizarre. We're going to beat you up. So Lord Shiva's now surrounded by gopis. They're going to beat him up. Fortunately, Purnamasi appeared on the scene and told the gopis, look, don't worry. I know this gopi. I realize she's a little eccentric, but she's a nice girl. Won't you let her into the rasa dance? Give her a chance. And the gopi said, look, if you say so, we will not beat her up, but we're not letting her in the rasa dance. She'll frighten Krishna. And the rasa dance will be finished for the night. So she can't come in. Purnamasi said, okay, I have an idea. See what a big, strong girl she is. She can be the bouncer. She can stay on the edge of the rasa dance and guard. And when unqualified people try to come in, she can send them out, kick them out. So the gopis agreed. Therefore, you find when you go in Vrindavan to Vansivat, you'll find on the edge of the arena is Gopishwar Shiva. And in the pictures, many pictures of the Rasa Leela, on one side you'll see Gopishwar Shiva. So they say, if you want to go into the Rasa Dance and take part, you need a ticket. The ticket collector is Vrinda Devi. She checks your ticket. In other words, she checks, are you qualified to enter the Rasa Dance? And if you're in, you are, she lets you in. If you're not, she calls Gopeshwar Shiva, and you're out. So this is also Gopeshwar Shiva. I mean, this is also Lord Shiva. This is, in one sense, the supreme form, really, of Lord Shiva, because this is Lord Shiva in Krishna Lila, not just in Narayana form, not just a presiding deity over the material nature of one of the demigods in a particular universe. This is a form of Lord Shiva in the eternal pastimes of Krishna in Sri Vrindavanda. So these are some things about Lord Shiva from the Shastric point of view and from the Vaishnava point of view, actually establishing who Lord Shiva really is and what he's really about, how he feels, what type of person is he. Vaishnavanam yatashalu. He's a great, great devotee of Krishna. This is who Lord Shiva really is. Hare Krishna. Sri Shivaratri Mahotsava Ki. Sri Shivaratri Mahotsava Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Hare Krishna.